Hello, and welcome to Canine Bingequake, the podcast where we discuss in depth the mostly unloved and unwatched Australian canine spin-off, one of the most niche corners of the Hooniverse. I'm Tom, this is my co-host Kevin.
Hello. And today we are joined by a very exciting guest, Hamish Steele of, among other things, Netflix's Dead End Paranormal Park. How are you doing today, Hamish?
I'm feeling wonderful. Did you have me on because I also created a show with a talking dog, or was it just coincidental?
Very happy coincidence, I'd say.
Well, any Doctor Who fan who has claims they've ever watched this show before are lying.
That sounds correct. That sounds objectively correct.
I was definitely aware of it, and I have seen clips. But when you asked to have me on, I jumped at the chance to fill in a little gap in my Hooniverse knowledge.
Because is it fair to say you're a pretty massive fan, just like the two of us?
Yeah, pretty much lifelong. One of my earliest memories is watching Dimensions in Time live. Finding it
that sets
terrifying.
The tone for this well.
Yeah, I mean
it is.
It's so funny that this aired the same day as the 11th Hour. Because it screams of wilderness years desperation.
Yeah.
Yes.
No,
it's like a 1997 real-time BBV thing,
yes,
that somehow came into existence 10 years later. Yeah.
And made it onto network TV, actual broadcast TV.
I mean, I guess we'll have to wait for another cancellation in Wilderness before we get Time Quake.
So how much did you know about this show? You said you'd seen clips. Any of them prepare you for this?
It's funny because, like I said, it aired the same... The first episode came out the same day as The 11th Hour, which I know why they must have done that, but it's so funny to try and launch a new canine spinoff during, like, New Doctor, New Era hype. Mm. Like, imagine announcing that they were going to make a, you know, they were dropping this the same day as the 60th, so I was like kind of aware of it happening, and then I actually googled to see if Time Quake ever came out, because it could have very easily slipped me by. I think of myself as someone who's pretty on it with what's happening in the Doctor Who world. I mean, I follow every news thing, I listen to podcasts, I'm like pretty aware of every single Big Finish box that happening. But for some reason, I hadn't watched K9. I do think I tried. I must have. I don't think I had the channels it aired in the UK, but it came out at the time when I fully was consuming every single bit of Doctor Who I could find. But maybe I looked at the trailer and sort of got the vibes. I mean, I will say my overriding impression of the show, if I could like start off and on like a big, this is my
absolutely.
First episode I've watched, episode 4. I kind of gleamed what was going on, and I knew the basic premise from, when the show was coming out. But I just feel really like grateful for the Sarah Jane Adventures and like, you know, good kids media. This, I don't want to be too negative because I feel like no one phones it in whenever they're trying to make a TV show, and it's really hard to make a TV show, as I know now. But it's pants.
Various comparisons, haven't we? Of like, this is like kind of kids 2000.
Yes,
we've had, it's like an episode of Scooby-Doo. We've had various ones running already on previous episodes. And what would you say its closest kind of vibes of other shows that you've seen?
I can't get like past how Australian it is and how Australian it's trying not to be.
Mm.
Which is really strange. I'm married to an Australian, and one thing about Australian media and acting I'm always fascinated by is that, like, the first thing you need to learn if you want to be an actor in Australia is, like, how to do any other accent other than Australian. American or English, because you're never going to be able to use it in your film career. And clearly a lot of these actors haven't done enough of their training, but it's so weird that it's set in London. And the thing it reminds me most of is, like, Power Rangers, because Power Rangers uses, like, the scenes from a Japanese show called Super Sentai. It is filmed in, like, Australia and New Zealand, but it's meant to be America. So it's got this really weird, uncanny, like, some shots are clearly a Japanese, like, back alley, and then some shots are clearly Sydney, but everyone is, like, trying to be American. And obviously I haven't watched the first episode. I don't know what the justification is, but everyone has to pretend to be British. And, like, I don't want to jump ahead too much, but there's the scene in this with a Ferris wheel. And I kept thinking, like, is that meant to be the is that meant to be the London Eye? Like, what is going on?
I think the
do we
net
want
effect
to start with that scene.
Well, I was just about to say, continuing on from that, I think the net effect of this kind of America pretending, oh sorry, not America, Australia, Brisbane specifically pretending to be London thing is that the city scenes, or the sort of the exterior scenes, just come across as incredibly generic, could be any city.
Well, I noticed that there was a lot of, like, real tight close-ups and, like, up angle shots so that you weren't actually seeing any like landmarks or buildings.
Yeah, which really hampers the direction actually being able to show you a sense of scale or kind of where, or be able to orientate yourselves in sort of where things are happening, whatever.
And not only London, but, like, future London. Like, you can't knock the show for not being ambitious. It has, like, no budget, and they're like, what if it was a post-apocalyptic, like, future in a different country? Let's do it.
Yeah, and for me at least, that's kind of where the setting gets hampered the most, because occasionally they do sell the sense of dystopia, but mostly it feels too normal to really convey the sense that we are in a totalitarian future state, which isn't really helped by the scripting decisions, I don't think, where, you know, they just randomly can decide to go take K-9 for a walk right past the robot police. What was going on there?
Yeah, and just the kind of the mother, you know, worrying about her kids on the Ferris wheel. Fine, it's a fine beat, but, like, again, it just feels like it could be something in any RTD era normal London sort of setup. It doesn't feel like we're in a dystopia somehow, the Ferris wheel setup. Yeah, it's odd.
But yeah, they still have a Ferris wheel. It's like, okay.
You would know all about writing apocalyptic settings with Ferris wheels, wouldn't you?
I suppose I would. Like I said, yeah, I truly don't want to knock it too much, because I do know it's hard, but I found that the authoritarian government were, like, not, I mean, this sounds like I'm trying to make some deep point about, like, politics, but to say that it didn't feel that different from today, in the fact that they were, like, clearly evil and clearly, like, there was all this, I don't know, it felt like it was written by someone who, like, knew they wanted, like, a totalitarian, authoritarian, whatever government, but, like, didn't really know what they were or, like, what actually living under them is like, because it's just them repeatedly talking about CCTV footage and like people wearing suits and being mean. But, like, I'm like, yeah, that's like living in any country right now. What's specially evil about this? Because you seem to be able to still go to the fair, walk your dog. Very weird.
And they even,
if it helps, you missed the episode with the VR space prison and the episode with the alien prison holding a drag queen, so you missed some good stuff.
Yes.
Lots of prisons.
There's a lot of prisons. Yeah,
that all totalitarian societies are primarily defined by their prisons, so America's screwed.
I guess they did that thing of, oh, we'll make a fake bomb scare so that we can kind of get credit from defusing it or something. That was, you know, the government had kind of set this up. That was the idea, wasn't it? That they had this kind of fake bomb thing they were pretending was a dissident attack, I guess, to justify being able to crack down on people or something.
Yeah, can someone walk me through what they were supposed to try to communicate there? Because they make the Ferris wheel go super fast, and then there's also a bomb. Why are there two threats, and what do they have to do with each other?
But remember, it's a non-explosive bomb.
That famous variety of bomb, yeah.
Can I just ask a couple of general questions about the show before
Absolutely.
We go into the episode? Okay. Has anyone commented on the fact that K-9 doesn't sound like K-9, even though it's like John Leeson? There's like a really odd performance or quality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've talked about it a couple of times. I don't know if it's just I think the filter might be slightly different, but also the kind of voice effect, but also the dialogue just isn't K-9-esque, is it? The dialogue is just,
no.
It doesn't sound like him, which shouldn't really bother me that much, but it is sort of, you know, he is meant to be the central selling point.
My biggest laugh of the episode was later on when K-9 has accepted that he's a murderer and so is driving himself to be arrested. And they're like, oh, you must be wrong. And K-9 goes like, I do not dream. I have no imagination. I am a criminal. And I'm like,
I was actually dying that whole sequence. I actually had to tweet just because I was losing my mind so much. I was watching K-9 confess to committing murder.
That is essentially the main plot hook, isn't it?
I can't handle
For anyone listening who doesn't have the idea of the episode, the main plot hook in this is that a bounty hunter, unsurprisingly given the title, turns up from the future and says, you know, K-9 is a murderer, we've got to track him down. And various shenanigans ensue from that, including K-9 thinking that, yeah, he really is a murderer. Which I think is quite a decent plot hook in a way.
It's a lot of interesting concepts for like a kids show.
Yeah,
a kids show about a authoritarian future London where a robot dog who we can't say why he has no memories. another question. Okay, just straight up, just questions about the show and the universe. I'm going to be describing a lot of people as like the boy and the
yes.
girl and the man.
Yeah.
So the curly haired boy who I have a fondness for because he plays a character called Arnold in an Australian sitcom called Please Like Me, which I'm a big fan of. And he's a great character in that. I felt very seen by him. But in this, he's just the boy. What's his relation to K-9? Does he treat K-9 as his friend, his dog, or his computer?
I guess so. That's the question. In the first K-9. Episode, K-9 falls through a time portal or something, and
time quake,
and sacrifices himself to save curly-haired boy's life, causing him to regenerate into the new model. And in the process, he basically sort of decides that curly-haired boy whose name is Starkey, he's like some sort of Uber hacker dude, he decides he's his master.
Okay.
Slightly because arbitrarily, really.
Is it because he's got curly hair and looks a bit like Tom Baker?
that'll do. Yeah, as good a reason
new
as
angles,
any.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, you're gone. Yep.
That's mostly my question, because a lot of this episode is about a bounty hunter trying to track down this dog who's a murderer. And I kept thinking, like, these people have known this robot dog for 4 weeks, let's say. Let's be generous. And they're like, no, never. And, like, the guy who... There's, like, a man in this who screams of, like, how Joss Whedon writes British people. He's, like, extremely, like, Giles and Wesley, like... And he's like, yes. Tea, everything is tea. Ooh, buddy, lula. And he's like, I'll never give you K-9. I wouldn't tell you. And I'm like, this sounds a bit harsh. And I'm like a Doctor Who fan, so I should have already investment in K-9. But K-9 dies all the time and always like comes back. And he at the end of the day, he is a toy. Like, he is a computer. And if someone was like, your computer killed someone, I'm going to take it. I just have to say that I would be like, sure, fine. I've not known him very long, and he's not been very useful.
Yeah. Hey,
at least this one can go and grow across, like, rocks and stuff.
Yes.
Yes, he flies now.
But oh, God. He flies now. But is he like a hand puppet? I kept thinking that the boy, Starkey, was, like, holding him the whole episode and, like, trying to make him look like he was floating.
That may be the case. Behind-the-scenes documentation of the show is lacking. Or at least we haven't been bothered to go and find it.
Why has, has Doctor Who magazine not done, like, a giant sort of lush special interviewing the whole cast and crew of K-9?
Are they allowed to? Genuine
like
question.
10 years.
I mean, they barely did anything on Class, so I'd be surprised if they did much on K-9.
Can I be controversial for a second?
Absolutely.
Please.
I don't mind the new design. Outside of the show, I thought it was disgusting. And I still don't like how kind of angry his eyes look.
Hmm.
But during the course of the show, I was like, yeah, that's fine. If I was a kid, I would probably respond a lot more to that than the original design. I do miss the collar but I find his ears really expressive. Like,
yeah, the ears are cute. Mm-hmm.
He's
more toyetic, isn't he?
God, they really wanted a whole toy line, didn't they?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Those are my main questions. I mean, the main question is why and like how and
Well, one thing that struck me very early on in this one is that I suppose this kind of wants to be the sort of something that both Doctor Who early on in the first season when it came back in 2005 and Torchwood both did, which is the sort of backstory episode for its strange spacefaring protagonist, like in a way, like what were they up to before they end up on Earth? And obviously the answer for Christopher Eccleston's Doctor is, you know, the Time War, and we see all this, I suppose, to some extent in Dalek, like that's the kind of, to a degree, that sort of backstory episode. And then I guess with Torchwood, perhaps you could say it's the grey stuff in series two. I don't know.
Even in series one, there's Small Worlds, which deals with a past relationship of his, and Captain Jack Harkness, which deals with how he got his alias.
Yeah, I guess
and
with Jack,
all
it's
of
the,
those
he's,
are
he's lived so long.
Yeah. Those are all a really illustrious company to be comparing this to, and I don't think he can really hold up.
Yeah,
What's funny is that when Doctor Who came back, you know, they really withheld saying Gallifrey for a few seasons. They like were drip feeding the backstory. I remember when Human Nature aired and like the first acknowledgement of like Paul McGann's Doctor like was a big deal. It was like quite a slow thing, and now, you know, the most recent episode of Doctor Who is like you need a PhD in Doctor Who to understand who half the old fucks in it are. Not to be judgmental, but
and
I
even then
with...
you can't understand the plot.
I decided to watch The Power of the Doctor with someone who hasn't watched Doctor Who before. part of the way that I got them to watch it was by lying and saying it was an hour long. But he loved it, but he did constantly say like, "Why is everyone like, who are these people?" Anyway, what I'm trying to say is with K-9, it's funny because it can't drip feed any of this information legally. Like, you can't, like, with Sarah Jane Adventures, for example, there was, like, little hints occasionally she'd, like, mention a Zygon or something, I don't know. And then, but in this, like, he legally can't have backstory. It's really funny. And when he was talking about his, like, I had this brief moment when I realized that the whole episode was about like something he may have done in the past. I'm like, oh yeah. I mean, like the whole episode is about how K-9 isn't a murderer, but the last thing I saw him do was like blow up a school full of teachers. So like, I know he, actually when I was watching this episode, I Googled like K-9 body count, but I couldn't find it.
we need to do that sometime.
Yes, a compilation. yeah, it's odd. And, well, so, yeah, I mean, the episode tries to get tension, doesn't it, I guess, running through the idea of, oh, can we trust K-9? Did he really commit this crime of killing a future galactic peace official person?
I really wanted him to.
Yeah, you wanted it to be revealed that he just did. Yeah. That would have been bold. In the end, it's not very surprising that, yeah, he didn't.
The evil-looking guy did it.
He just... Yeah, sorry about spoilers. He just witnessed the bounty hunter killing this guy, and that's why he's come through the portal to try and get rid of the only witness. But it's odd, because I suppose it wants to be a kind of, oh, will the team make it through this, or will they sort of turn on one another? But there isn't really... Like you said, Hamish, they're very quick to just instantly defend him. It can't possibly be, you know, K-9's done something bad. I guess Darius is a bit more skeptical, the blonde guy.
Ron and Hermione.
Yeah.
I keep referring
to him as the knockoff fan fiction Draco Malfoy.
I have to say, as a first episode, they didn't make much of an impression.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the first episode where knockoff Hermione, Georgie, did not make much of an impression. Usually she's sort of stolen every scene, I would say. Yeah, she was barely
in it very much.
Well, there was so much in this episode. Like, towards the end, there was like one reference to her needing to take a shower. And I like forgot that part of the episode was them like being fugitives in the sewer. Like,
which is not the first time they've run around in the sewers, by the way. Which seems to be a recurring thing of, oh, they just go in the underground and the tunnels and sewers and things. That's just
look, as long as it doesn't make her have to throw out her sparkly pink shoes. We have standards here.
I mean, they built the sewer set. They built the prison set. Maybe, like, this is, Bob Baker's classic Who writing training, and he feels that, like, every three episodes they need to get, like, imprisoned again and go back to the tunnels. And he's treating this all like one serial.
One thing that there's maybe a little bit of mileage in, I think, and it comes out a tiny bit here, but not enough, is that Georgie's mum works for the department. So we see her quite a bit in this episode. And I think she's at her most interesting when the script writing remembers that her daughter is involved with these dissidents and running around, and, you know, she starts to worry about her and stuff, and there's this kind of...
In general, I thought that was the strongest plot of this episode.
Yeah,
yes, the definitely. Bomb threat was absolutely ridiculous, but the actual interdepartment squabble using the bounty hunter as sort of a catalyst to have their little square off over who gets jurisdiction over K-9, I actually thought that was engaging. I thought that worked in a way that some of the other plots here didn't so much.
I was too distracted by her accent. It was like, why do you think this dog has committed murder? What I don't understand is that, like, why can't they be Australian? Like, makes no sense.
I think it should be set in Brisbane. Yeah, I think it would it would feel more truer. It would mean the performances are less hampered by the need to do these sort of, Emma Top Watson esque accents, at least in the case of Georgie, which really sounds like Emma Watson impression.
I have to assume it was financial. Someone thought, hey, if we can present this as authentically British, people will assume it's real Doctor Who and buy it.
Well, on that note of thinking it's authentically British, last episode, episode 3, there was this whole thing about baked beans and how, you know, oh, we can cook baked beans in the fire and K-9 will save the day by blowing up a can of baked beans.
Yeah. Hey, Mish, let me explain this to you for a second. Last episode, K-9 saved the day by getting really, really high and trying to cook baked beans. I am not exaggerating.
That makes more sense than the resolution to this episode, but we'll talk about that later.
Well, that's right, and here you get a reference to baked bean sandwiches, and then the resolution of this episode involves tea.
I don't think English people like baked beans that much.
Well, I've never heard of a baked bean sandwich. Have you?
No, it must be a future thing.
Obviously, cuisine goes down the drain in the future. But yeah, it does.
It's a totalitarian society.
It does just feel like an Australian perspective of kind of, we've got to sort of Britishize this as much as possible with all this baked beans and tea and blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Kevin, how much Australian kids TV did you watch growing up? Because the UK got a lot of it.
Yeah, the US gets none of it. I honestly don't know about most Australian TV, and what I do know is mostly from British friends who talk about, like, I don't know, Neighbours, and I finally watched Wentworth, which is not a kid's show, but very enjoyable. The Australian pop culture scene is utterly lost on America.
The shows I was thinking of is there was an Australian show I watched as a kid called Round the Twist, set in a lighthouse with, like, Monster of the Week stuff. But also, there was a New Zealand show called The Tribe, which was another post-apocalyptic kids show in which all adults had been killed off. And it does feel like Australian kids shows are always kind of dark, but sort of flippant with it. Like I said, there was this kids show where it was just like, yeah, well, most of the people on the planet have now died, but we're going to have fun. It's like kids rule. It's going to be cool. Fun times. And this is just like...
That sounds very Lord of the Flies.
Also, can I just say the word departmentoids out loud?
Yes.
That was what they called the police officers in this one, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah.
Because they've called them something else previously.
RoboFuzz.
Well, that was RoboFuzz. But there was also...
That was like CC...
CCPCs, yeah. Cybernetic Civic Pacification Units or something, I don't know. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
They were interesting. Moving on.
You know what? In the first couple episodes, they were genuinely the best monster design they had.
Yeah.
Well, actually, on that, what do we think of the bounty hunter guy then, who I guess is the antagonist here?
I love his, like, Misty from Pokemon side ponytail. He was Russian at the start, he was Scottish at the end.
Yeah, I don't know what the accent was going for. There was a weird speech pattern as well, like, something B, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, it was odd.
I thought he was really fun, honestly. The moment where he comes through this show's version of the Hellmouth and immediately just waits around to be served tea before getting to actually being a villain.
That was quite fun.
I was here for that.
It's a ridiculous sequence, yeah. Yeah, the professor and the bounty hunter is kind of an odd... yeah, it's a classic comic pairing.
I'm going to go on AO3 and look up everything I can about those two. He had that problem that... I thought he was fine, but he had that problem that I see a lot in, like, cheap shows where I couldn't buy it. His, like, stubble was too perfect, his teeth were too perfect, and, like, all of his, like, grungy, I'm, like, Judge Dredd sort of stuff just felt like such a costume. He felt like such a, like, LARPer. Let's just say this show did not convince me that a bounty hunter from the future could be real. But he was fine. Are there monsters in this show, or is it all just like guys with stuff stuck to their face? I guess that's...
Oh no, there's definitely monsters.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first episode revolved around a walking giant hunk of fiberglass that vomited on people.
Yes. These big turtles, and then episode 3 we had these creatures that kind of... They like extreme
neurons.
Cold, and they can leach stuff out your brain.
Like
and,
yeah, or whatever, yeah.
The Corvin.
Corvin. Yeah, we had the...
Yeah.
And this episode had a Ferris wheel.
They had to save the budget some week.
I laughed at the line "Amnesia is not a defense in the court of law," which I thought was... I don't know why I wrote that down. I found K-9 quite funny. Like, he was so blunt. And, like, I kept thinking, like, if you would not make any of the choices about, like, what he sounded like or what he looked like had it not been a spinoff of, you know, a character from the 80s. I feel like I don't know. He just had a lot of kind of blunt delivery of things. And
he's sassier, isn't he?
Yeah. It might just be in comparison to Scrunt or whatever his name is. Scorbit. Who's the main character?
Oh, Starkey.
Starkey. who felt a little bit like a non-character, if I'm...
Yeah, he's a bit wet. Yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite K-9 line in this was when Starkey's trying to explain that the Ferris wheel is meant to be fun or something, and K-9 says, fun and pointless have the same meaning. Which is, I'm deciding to take as the name, you know, we might as well refer to the whole project as being fun and pointless having the same meaning.
My favourite line was when Not Giles said, like, I don't know where K-9 is, and Ahab's voice analyzer said, he is lying, and then he went, my voice analyzer says you are lying. Like, yeah.
And then did. My voice analyzer is saying you're telling the truth when he says he'll defend K-9.
Wow. Go on.
Oh, I was going to say, another weird thing, I think, of this one that I don't think we've had so much in the last few episodes. There's kind of a major scene that just feels like it doesn't happen, which is this bit where they come and grab K-9 in the tunnels. So that when I say they, that's Ahab, the bounty hunter, and the department guys. And then we just cut to the two department figures, Georgie's mum and the other one, and we just get this detail relayed to us about stuff that happened off screen. Of how, oh, yes, he betrayed me and he went off with K-9 and blah, blah, blah. It's like, it's a very weird scene to not show, I feel. It just, you know, that surely that should have been a sort of dramatic kind of pivotal moment. I don't know, it was weird. It just felt like the emphasis was in the wrong place there.
I mean, it all just feels cheap. And I don't mean that in like a mean way. I'm sure, like, I admire that the show is so ambitious. Like, it's not, you could have half asked this way more, but I do like you can make fun of Bob Baker, I guess, you know, clinging to K-9, Time Quake, all that stuff, but like, I admire it. This sort of, you know, I made this, it's popular, I'm gonna try and make anything happen with it no matter what, even if it, like, the whole, like, legally this is such a bizarre, like, thing that exists, but I'm like glad it does. I'm always sort of pro things entering kind of the public domain, because I don't think, you know, Sherlock Holmes being in the public domain has hampered Sherlock Holmes. If one company owned Sherlock Holmes and they made one Sherlock Holmes thing and it flopped, then there's your lot. But you could get good things and bad things and whatever. I know when, like, Winnie the Pooh entered the public domain, people were like, haha, Disney's going to be, like, go crazy. But, like, you know, Pinocchio's in the public domain. Lots of things they've made stuff out of are in the public domain. It doesn't hamper anything. It means we get, like, some good Pinocchio movies and some bad ones. So I'm, like, okay with there being this kind of K-9 series that isn't a Doctor Who series. And I don't know the right situation. Is there going to be a day when, like, the Daleks become public domain, but Doctor Who isn't, you know? Or, like,
yeah,
it's such an,
I mean, there's got to be a day where that comes, right? Because, I mean, we have serials going back to the 60s. Maybe not the Daleks, because there's so much stuff clamped down on that. But, like, when are the Tribe of Gum going into public domain? That's madness.
I think I read somewhere that it's when all of the people who have worked on a production have died, and then it's 50 or 60 years after that or whatever. So a lot of them won't be until kind of, you know, 2040 something.
Wow.
So it's still a way off.
I mean, that was...
mark your calendars.
It's a bit of a tangent, but it's like, I'm not upset that this exists. I'm like kind of happy it exists, because obviously you are, because you're doing a whole podcast about it. But like, I think more of this kind of stuff should exist. And maybe it will. Maybe that's, you know, the rumored spin-off city that RTD2 will bring. But I like K-9.
And if we're talking things we have to respect, I also have to respect that this show, like you were saying, it's not just ambitious, but every episode we've seen so far has ended with the basic premise of the show in a slightly different place. You won't have seen that, Hamish, since you've just come in for one episode, but first episode, of course, you introduced K-9. Second episode was where they dropped the reveal of Georgie's mother working for the department. Third episode introduced a new ongoing monster and changed things up a bit. And here, again, the status of the canine working with the department has changed. Now Georgie has to work under her mother, all these things where it feels like they were thinking very carefully about the structure of the season and how they want to advance things. There's entire other arc plots that didn't even get a mention here. Like, this is the first episode where the professor doesn't have exactly one character beat, which is mourning his family who have fallen through a time portal, doesn't even come up here. And I kind of think that's cool.
Yeah, and so on that note of the fact that by the end of this one, they are now officially sort of working for the, you know, this fascist department, government, whatever. That's kind of, it's a very weird beat, but I also quite like it, like you say, because it's kind of weirdly prickly and just, it sort of, I mean, I doubt the show will do this in huge depth, but it raises the questions of, you know, to what extent, if you're in this kind of society, can you change something from the inside, or can you try and make something, can you, you know, improve things from this position of being even part of the system? I think that could be quite interesting, potentially. I don't know if they'll go there, but yeah, it's an odd choice, but I kind of like it.
I think it's cool whenever kids media delves into like this part of the world, you know, this kind of aspect that not every person in authority has your best interests in mind. It's also bad, sadly, but it's like, it's sort of ambitious, and it doesn't seem to be, you know, talking down to kids. I'm hearing that the plot does change every week. I might watch the rest of it.
We have a convert.
Maybe, I mean, the link you sent me didn't work, but I found out it's all on YouTube, so that's a sign of a show being super popular. I do think we need to talk about the ending, because K-9 has confessed to being a murderer. He's being dragged away by a magical freezing cold
lasso? Is it a lasso?
Dog like collar? That.
Yeah, dog collar lasso. Yeah, that makes sense.
But I feel like them saying that, oh, it's also freezing cold, don't touch, feels... I mean, I was going to say ADR'd, but like, it's a robot dog, but all his lines are ADR'd. But like, they could kind of say anything. And it's like absolute zero. You touch it, you die. But it's as cold as a normal cup of tea is hot. And that is able to free him from the collar. A splash of tea. And then... the whole episode is trying to prove that K-9's not a murderer, and then he kills someone.
Yeah. Well, or does Georgie kill him by breaking the connection? It's not entirely clear the way they shoot it. That.
Yeah, I think Georgie kills someone.
Yeah, by breaking the cord or whatever of the thing, this sends the bounty hunter in a very sort of confusing and quick shot, falling through the portal, and then, like you say, into the depths of space where he will just asphyxiate.
I actually really did love that, T-Shell. I feel like sci-fi often forgets that the Earth moves, so to have the fact that he gets sent through time but not space, leave him stranded in space, that really delighted me, actually.
I was delighted. I just think it was so funny after an episode trying to prove his innocence that they like all gather around and joke about how he's like suffocating in space now. Like, it's such a funny detail to add because the threat is gone. They can just say like, oh yeah, he went back to his own time. Great. Cool. No, we need to twist the knife. We need all the kids watching to know that bounty hunter, his like blood is turning to ice and his head's about to explode.
Also, personally, it's I think Georgie should be allowed to commit murder as a treat.
Yeah.
It's a classic thing as well of the previous episode, episode 3, K-9 was zapping away at the Corvin, the monster, the creature, and that's fine. So it's the usual thing of, oh, well, you know, killing a humanoid thing is bad and killing a kind of, or, you know, killing a human-shaped thing is bad and killing a monster is chill.
I'm not joking. Like, in school reunion, he commits genocide. It's like the whole like genocide thing in Doctor Who is just like some weeks it's fine, some weeks it's not.
Some weeks it's very cavalier, yeah.
Sometimes you just can't shoot the spider, but you can let it suffocate.
Yeah. As long as it's not guns, if it's explosives or lasers or dropping people from a great height, that's fine.
But basically, guns, you're allowed to kill people if you're really creative and cool about it.
Yeah. Or you're a dog. I mean, the whole episode about, like, they're trying... It's just funny. Like, is the bounty hunter treating K-9 like a dog or a machine that's gone mad or just like a person? Because it seems like a person. They talk about a trial.
Also, the show's kind of been hit and miss on that. Hasn't it, Tom, like, referred to K-9 as being alive a few times?
I think so. I'd have to go back and check, but yeah. It's not entirely clear.
What is going on? There are aspects of this show that feel so planned out, and there's other bits where it's like, what the hell? Where is your Bible?
There was a line at the end about how they're declaring this group the K-9 unit. And that did feel like a little like wink to camera.
Mm.
But has any plot or script for Time Quake ever leaked?
I don't think so, as far as we know. It's supposed to have involved Omega, isn't it?
Yeah.
The central premise. I think that's all we know.
K-9 versus Omega.
There have been next to no announcements since the initial one. I think their K-9 Facebook page has posted a few things just saying, oh, it's still in the works, but they haven't done that in years.
I think when Bob Baker died, whatever that was, earlier this year, last year, I can't remember now, there was something about how he had recently been working on scripts for a new film and series or something, and that they were hoping things would see the light of day and get made and so on, which, you know, I'm not going to hold my breath, but yeah. Because this took forever to materialize. I mean, it's something we went into in the very first episode that we did, but they first announced that Bob Baker and Paul Tamms were trying to do this in about 1997, and it didn't happen until, 2009-10. It just took a long time to get off the ground.
It does feel cheap and it does feel a little sloppy, but it also feels like a passion project, and that, like, it feels like a passion project with a ton of compromises. Like, I'm sure in his head, like, K-9 goes to a future world and tries to, like, but that's all Classic Who. All Classic Who is just, like, ambition minus budget equals Classic Who.
I think this is in a way sort of the truest spirit of Classic Who we've gotten this century, really. I think in general the plots, the production value, the sensibility of how it builds its spacey things, it's very classic series in a way. I have to admit I am kind of charmed by, even when it doesn't really work.
We agree.
One sort of, I don't know if we're getting toward wrapping up now, Kevin, but one final question I thought might be interesting to pose to you, Hamish, as a writer of these sorts of shows yourself.
Thank you.
Well, I say these sorts of shows, not comparing what you do to K-9, but
it's true. I mean, it's a kids' show.
Yeah, stuff for children. Exactly. There we go. Yeah. If you were looking at this sort of as a script that you have to try and hammer into shape, what perhaps changes would you make to try and, I don't know, make it to get it to the screen in a form you would be happier with? Or is that
It's hard because I haven't watched any other episodes. I was extremely disorientated at the start because it starts with Xanthus, the person who is murdered, like, talking directly to you. I wasn't sure if... and he looked so 80s. He looked like... I wasn't unsure if that's how every episode started. Like, this is the monster of the week. And no. I think there's so much time... The thing that I get frustrated with in lots of scripts is the thing that's actually interesting is often not the, like, longest part of the episode. So there's so much, like, faffing about, when to me what's interesting is K-9 thinking that he might have murdered someone. And that's like a minute or two of screen time, maybe. I think it would be, I guess, more interesting if earlier on in the episode he was like, well, he does do this a bit. He's like, maybe I did kill her. I have no idea. I'm, you know, I have no memories. I just feel like there was like one line about the trial of K-9, and I was just like, I want to see that. I want to see a dog take the stand. And the thing with K-9 is that he'd be so like logical and honest the whole time that like, I'm sure that his trial, that people could like really trap him in kind of logic puzzles where he's like, well, yes, I think I must have killed him. Oh dear. I'm not sure. I feel like the Ferris wheel is just like, could you not come up with something else? It feels like there's a Ferris wheel near the studio they film it, and they like, but it's like, it starts speeding up, but then they never cut away to it again because that looks stupid. And like, the people on the Ferris wheel are on there for like 10 minutes. They'd all have like passed out and be dead. Like, it, I don't know. It's hard to know going into the middle. I enjoyed it. Like, I know for like the benefit of podcasts, it's like, it's so insane, it's so crazy, but like, it's, you know, what I expected to an extent. Those weren't very concise notes, were they?
No, it's fascinating. Yeah.
You can't fix perfection.
Look, I need to find that YouTube file of this, download it, rip that, and just post the clip of K-9 thinking he's a murderer to Twitter. I think people get a real kick out of that.
I'm going to post the bit where, like, one of my, a tweet that went viral was me just filming, like, 10 seconds of the TV show Charmed. And it was so nuts. Someone like jumped into a sink and disappeared. And then like someone got knocked against the wall, and like the amount of weird special effects. I think I just want to post the like final few seconds of them like throwing tea at a ice CG dog collar so that a guy flies through a portal, and then they all laugh that he's going to suffocate in space. I'm like, that's the TV show.
All right, Hamish, shall we wrap it up and have you tell everyone where you can find, where they can find you?
Yeah, so I'm going to be writing Big Finish's K-9 sequel series. there's a new box set. It's called Curse of the Departmentoids. And it costs £40, and Louise Jameson is great in it. So until that comes out in 2027, you can find me anywhere at Hamish Steele. I actually do have two Big Finish plays. I think they're both on Spotify. I joke because I love.
They're very good too.
They were the first things I ever wrote. So obviously watch Dead End Paranormal Park on Netflix if you want more Hamish writing, but you want it to be a little bit worse. You can go find, I think they're called Big Dig and the Slots of Giza, which is nuts, on, if you want some Doctor Who universe writing from me. And I have a podcast of my own called Waking Kitchen Nightmares, where we watch episodes of the Gordon Ramsay verse.
That's been fun. I hope your next waking nightmare is a crossover between that and this. I really do.
I think Gordon Ramsay would be a very good like authoritarian government sort of agent, you know. It must feel really annoying being like a government agent for an authoritarian government, but then you realize you're also in a kid series. So it's like kids that are constantly going to be like stopping your plans and not like anything serious. Like, oh, those meddling kids.
Yeah, like you'd think that you'd be getting beaten by like a bureaucratic policy or budgets or something, but no, it's children.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
No, thank you so much for making the time to join us. Yeah.
And as ever, you can find me at ScribbleScript on Twitter, since it doesn't seem to be dying anytime soon. And Tom, you are still running the K9 Bingequake Twitter. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much for joining us, Hamish, and everyone have a wonderful night.
You have been listening to K9 Bingequake with your hosts Tom Marshall, Kevin Bernard, and special guest Hamish Steele. This episode, Fun and Pointless Have the Same Meaning, was recorded on the 3rd of December 2022 and was edited by Kevin Bernard. Theme music was composed by Jack Geiderer. Thank you for listening, and remember to make fun of Kevin for forgetting to record this.